All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Gray Malkin Lane Channel's Patreon. We are here today to talk all about a character I'm oddly fond of, despite so many things that should be wrong. The character of Forearm. My friend Ken Christ is joining me today. Ken, welcome back to the show. How are you, my friend?
Thank you very much. I'm hanging in there. There's a lot going on, so it's nice to have a break from it all to sit down and talk about something fun.
Life has a way of catching up to us sometimes, but yeah, it's fun to nerd out with my friends. That's my favorite part too. The chaos of my job and children. I get to close the door once in a while, you know. Tell everybody a little about yourself if they're unfamiliar with you.
I am big X-Men fan, have been for the majority of my life. Came in with the animated show like most people of the 35 to 38-ish age group. It was such a great way to escape like reality of like a sad little gay Texas boy, like into the world of X-Men, where I know there's so many similarities to attitudes towards mutants versus attitudes that I was internalizing being, you know, in the closet as a kid. And I never stopped loving it. And then enter podcast age when I can just consume X-Men content nonstop. And it's just like a dream come true. And so this is my second time guesting on this show, and I'm so incredibly grateful and happy to be here.
I look forward to having you back. I really enjoy people who are witty and fun and like not afraid of homework. Like that's my favorite kind. You know, just vibing. You have quite a following online. Do you want to tell people a little bit about what you're known for?
I basically post a lot of thirst traps and a lot of socialist content. Hardcore anti-capitalist, muscular and gay, and therefore have a large internet following because gay men are horny. That's really all there is to it.
And speaking of horny gay men, is Forearm a character that you were familiar with prior to this conversation, or but my interest to discover this character? How did you first come across Forearm?
I first came across Forearm in, it would have been X-Force, like let's say X-Force like 26-ish, like right as like Feral started to go, well, Feral was always kind of bad, right after like Danny's did her sort of defect to MLF, and we sort of started seeing those characters fleshed out a little bit more, and he was just so big and hot. And
my first issue of Marvel Comics that I ever picked up and purchased was X-Force 27, which is the beginning of that storyline where Feral defects. We got to do a Rainfire episode on my Patreon recently with Kaelin Bhatia where we talk about this. But Forearm is one of those kind of four mutant liberation front villains, along with Tempo, Wildside, and Reaper, who are featured there. I'm fond of all four, but Tempo's my favorite. Forearm is my second favorite.
I love the two of them probably equally, but for very different reasons.
yes, very different reasons indeed, although they both give major queer energy off, which is always delight. Well, frankly, every character in the mutant liberation front gives off queer energy. If you're created by Rob Liefeld, you're automatically bisexual at the very least. Like that's kind
100%.
Of key here. Forearm is one of the running jokes in the X-Men universe, and there's a lot of these. We love, you know, like Vanisher going to my show. Vanisher's real name is revealed to be Telford E. Porter, and his power is teleportation. the Riddler in Batman is Enigma. Forearm is one of those characters whose name is just so tongue-in-cheek. It's F-O-R-E-A-R-M, but he also has four arms growing out the side of his abdomen. And he's super strong. Rob Liefeld created a bunch of characters for the Mutant Liberation Front when he came on as kind of that MTV generation artist. At the end of the New Mutants run, they gave him a lot of work at the beginning. And this is like the Image Comics guys, right? This is the Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson, like patch of artists. Liefeld's art is very, I think when he has time to complete a piece, he's a talented kind of original artist. But he takes a lot of shortcuts in his work. It's a little sloppy. He's notoriously terrible for drawing feet. Huge torsoed characters, like women with teeny tiny waists and huge boobs.
Yeah.
I watched a documentary back in college. I'm a clinical social worker, called Tough Guys, G-U-I-S-E by Jackson Katz. And it's dated. It's from the early 2000s. But it talks about how masculinity in American culture meant that men were getting bigger, bigger, bigger. Like the G.I. Joe characters in the 70s were like little skinny soldier guys. But by the time you see comics in the 90s, they're these huge torsos with thin waists and muscular legs and giant fucking guns on their arms, where women got classically smaller. We've got that Barbie trope with the thin waist, big boobs. And Liefeld's art is very much this way. You look at the way he draws Cable and Forearm versus the way he draws Boom Boom and Tempo.
Psylocke. Very, very oh my God.
So iconic. And this character is, you know, over, what, 35 years old, because he first shows up in 1990. Yeah. What do you think about the visual of this guy? He's giving very queer Folsom energy with his harness and his big muscly
bicep. Totally. He steps like straight out of a fetish magazine. Harness and the big bulging muscles and the 90s head sock thing that's just so like quintessential to all the characters from that era. But he's like just big tits, big arms, there's just so much of him to love.
You'd fuck a guy with forearms is what I'm hearing.
Oh, in a heartbeat. Especially if they were forearms looking like that. Oof, boy, howdy.
Ken is a very muscular man. Your husband is also a very muscular man. I think you have a type, yes. Perhaps.
There's definitely something aesthetically pleasing. I wouldn't say it's not my only type. I don't want to get like hate mail. I sort of think of him the same way I think of Juggernaut. He is this like big oafish brute who is so like hyper masculinized that he just comes off as the gayest thing on earth. And that's like one of my favorite things in the world. A friend of mine used to say there, like whenever he would meet like a really big buff guy who was like super femme and queenie, he was like, I love those men because they wear their muscles like a feather boa. And I'm like, oh my God, I love that. And that's the energy that he gives me, that forearm gives me. And because he's this big brute, but he's also like, you see these like gleams of sensitivity like throughout his, except for like this one weird part where he, I think it was Excalibur when he was like all macho and dumb.
Yeah. He's all dumb because there's the trope of the big dumb guy, right? Marvel has a slew of these characters, as does every franchise, where there's that one giant muscly guy. You know, we begin with Juggernaut is of course a huge one. Sasquatch on Alpha Flight. The Hulk is kind of the original version of that. The Thing in the Fantastic Four. We love to have like that one big bodybuilder guy.
Calvin Rankin for a little bit.
Oh my goodness, like Calvin Rankin. I did the Cerebro episode on Calvin Rankin.
That's right. Yeah, oh yeah. My God.
He's one of my favorites. If I ever get to write an X-Men book, I will work some Calvin Rankin content in. You have my word.
Good.
Forearm comes with the Mutant Liberation Front. And we talked about this a little bit in the Rainfire episode. Cable is coming in. It's the MTV generation. Cable's coming in and he is taking the Xavier students who Xavier trains for a while, but then drama happens and he basically abandons them, as you know, leaves them to Magneto. And now they're off on their own. These are the young generation growing up. It's the 80s kids going into the 90s, basically. Mm-hmm. And we have a new kind of paramilitary approach to what it means to represent Xavier's dream. These kids are committing terrorist acts, they're fighting back, they're making very morally compromised choices, which is something we still see in comics exploring youth in all comic books since then, right? Yeah. The idea of rebellion or what it means to stand up, right up until, you know, NYX and Avengers Academy, like the books that are coming out today that are about kids, Champions a few years ago.
You sort of forget that like the original X-Men and the New Mutants were child soldiers for Xavier. And then like they just, Cable at least acknowledges that and leans into it rather than like trying to take some moral high road and be like, oh no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm protecting these children. Like, no, he's like, I'm like, we're here to fuck shit up.
Well, except Cable's a really bad leader. Cable has like secret agendas and he's keeping secrets. And the kids very quickly into the X-Force run turn against him and rebel on their own anyway. But the counter to Cable is literally his evil clone, who's the gayest character in the whole franchise, Strife, who has also come back from the future and has formed his own version of X-Force. I would love to, frankly, I say this on my show all the time, but I mean it. I would love to write like an early Mutant Liberation Front book. The idea of like writing the limited series where Strife recruits each of these soldiers and like what that means. There's some really great characters in here. Nicieza draws a lot of character innovation and motivation in just a couple caption boxes for each character. But otherwise, we just have the Liefeld drawing the 90s tropes, right? We've got the triangle heads, it's Wild Side on one side and Feral on the other. Lots of characters with swords and big arms. And in the MLF, there's a lot of racial stereotypes. There's characters like Sumo and Kamikaze and Dragoness. samurai. There are like a lot of Asian stereotypes being used here. Forearm is in this group. And I think he just came from some sketchbook that Rob Liefeld had when he was like 12 and he, you know, drew a bunch of characters. The name forearm represents a body part, obviously, the part between your elbow and your wrist. But the verb forearm means to like arm in advance. I like the tongue in cheek idea of this, the idea of the verb being the source of his nickname. A couple of years ago, I've been writing some original content for the last few years making this show. And my friend Seth Martell and I, on Pride Month 2 years ago, did a series of just 5 pages exploring 5 random mutants who were like talking about on the page what it meant to have Krakoa be home. And we did a full page about Forearm. Forearm's like hanging out with his dog in his like little Krakoan flat. He works out, he like bakes a pie, falls asleep on the couch with his, you know, hand on the remote and like his hand in a bag of chips. And he's just like chilling out a little bit. And writing that page for this character made me so happy. So we've talked about the visual a little bit. What are your thoughts on the early Mutant Liberation Front as the counter to X-Force? They're like, X-Force is doing it right, but the Mutant Liberation Front is like a little more evil because they'll kill people all the way, you know?
I've always had trouble not sympathizing with X-Men villains because like everyone is an asshole. Like they're literally trying to be extreme. Like the humanity is trying to kill them. And that's been like the running theme since the 70s. I find it difficult not to sympathize with like Forearm and Tempo because they're level-headed at least. I don't necessarily sympathize with Wildside because he's a loose cannon. They're basically the same. It's just like one group kills and the other one tries to kill less.
It's a great team and there's tons to explore. Not a lot of them get deep exploration. Forearm gets a little more than most, but on both sides you have the big giant guy. Warpath is on the other side, right? Who's so hot. And then we have Forearm on this side with Feral being the one that's taking it too far on X-Force. Where Wildside is the one taking it too far on the Mutant Liberation Front. Wildside seems to initiate torture. So just a batch of whole new characters. We first see this group in New Mutants 86-87. So Louise Simonson is writing. It's 1990. Rob Liefeld's here. And they're attacking a base in Dark Hole, Wyoming. They kill the guards, blow up the base, and we meet the team in a caption box. They are Wildside, who can distort reality, making them invisible. Forearm, whose multiple fists carry a super strong wallop. Tempo, who can make time fly with her. Reaper, who through his flail emits paralyzing neural disruptors. Strobe, who can burn her way through almost anything. And the incredible shrinking Thumbelina. Like, again, there's a lot of bizarre characters.
I have a real soft spot for Thumbelina too, actually.
I may have used Thumbelina in a story as well. I'm not writing for Marvel, but I write scripts literally every day and I hope to get the call sometime. But yeah, I like her a lot too, actually. And her twin brother Slab, who's another huge muscly guy. Forearm in his first appearance is very scrawny and a little awkward. We get dialogue. Keep your mind on business, Wildside. Keep us invisible to them. Boss said keep him as confused as possible for as long as possible. He gets to punch some guys. He gets shot in the arm. They blow up a base. 15 people are killed. And there's a public message released that says, we are the Mutant Liberation Front. Our demands are simple. Free the captive mutants known in the press as Rusty and Skids, or we will take them from you. Now, Strife does not give a fuck about Rusty or Skids, but he wants to piss Cable off.
Nobody does.
I mean, I do. Poor Rusty. Have you read the new X-Factor book?
I haven't. No, I haven't yet.
Rusty died on Avalon, like back in the late 90s. They resurrected him in a story on Krakoa in like one page. And then he got announced as part of the new X-Factor lineup and he gets murdered in the first issue. And he uses his name Fire Fist, which is a terrible name.
That's so on brand for Rusty, though. Like, Fire Fist is so a name he would come up with.
Are you a Strife fan? If so, what do you like about Strife?
I love Strife. So knowing that he looks just like Cable underneath is ace. But he is just like if camp was a superpower, like he's got it. Like he is so over the top with everything and is like all of his like his pointy little shoulder pads. And like the action figure was like so pointy and dangerous. Like everything about Strife, I find he obviously evil and bad, blah blah blah. But he's just such an endearing character.
I love the
so over the top.
I love the phrase when you talk about acting, people who can effectively really go over the top without being too much. Like Joan Crawford does this at a lot of her stuff, right? The phrase I often hear is like, they chew the scenery. And Strife is that all the time. Sinister chews the scenery, but Strife chews the scenery times 5.
Oh, sinister wishes. Sinister wishes.
Forearm, we get a couple things in the beginning where, you know, he calls himself the strongest on the team. Tempo's powers can drain you if she uses them too much, and he complains a little bit. They liberate Rusty and Skids, and then New Mutants gets canceled with issue number 100, and it's a lot about the kids finding leadership under Cable. And this is where Forearm kind of gets his upgrade. He's got his red harness now.
Just all of a sudden is a different character, and I guess for the better.
We need a big guy on both sides, and that's how it works. And then the new X-Force book is launched, and the first 10 issues or so of X-Force are kind of a rough read. Diaz is doing his best on top of Liefeld's crazy inconsistent pencils, but it's not an easy time, and Forearm gets to show up here a little bit. This is that like Toad's Brotherhood story that goes on for like 5 issues.
Tell me if I have this right. In the Liefeld era, the story was basically done after the art, right? So like he did all the art and then they like penciled in the story afterwards.
I don't know exactly what the format does. You know, the Marvel method is the writer will come up with a basic plot and then the artist will interpret the plot and then the writer will come back and add the dialogue later. So it's very collaborative and the writer can't fully plot until the art's done. So there's a lot of things like people having to work shit into the story. Like, I don't know why this building just fell over. So I guess I'll mention a bomb. Liefeld, I think, was kind of supposed to be like, they gave him just kind of free reign to like, you're a talent. Yeah. Everybody's following you. Do whatever you want. And then Nicieza was the one that had to kind of make sense of it a little bit. I almost feel like it went backwards. I feel like Liefeld was plotting and then Nicieza took over, but it shifted pretty quickly because Liefeld was very inconsistent and Nicieza is very, very consistent.
Yeah. He was a godsend to that franchise.
Claremont's leaving the books and it expands. Like the lineup expands. Yeah. This is where all the creative teams shift up. New Mutants becomes X-Force. Right in X-Force number one, we learn from Forearm that his strength is continually increasing, which is something we get. Like the more he uses his strength, the stronger he gets. Not as a counterpoint to his intelligence, which is often a story we see. When someone gets stronger and stronger, they get dumber and dumber. We don't really get a lot of exploration about what that means for him, though. But the idea of restraint, like having to pull your punches and be careful and not hurt anybody, that's the thing we see with strong guy a little bit.
I've never really thought of it as like them having to restrain themselves, especially from a villain side, but he is like, as far as villains go, Forearm is less violent and wants to cause less damage. And he's really more about getting the point across. I've never really understood why they felt the need to, I don't know if they were afraid of like of story breaking with having a character being too physically strong and not restraining themselves. I've definitely noticed it. I just have never really understood the point.
A lot of the stuff with the MLF, it's just because Fabian gives us like a caption box. With Wildside, it mentions, for example, that he grew up in like a very posh, rich home and now he's lashing out. But there's like never really any confirmation of that in any stories. So with Forearm, it's kind of a thing he does to give Forearm a little character, you know? We just did an episode recently on Grizzly where Nicieza is like, Grizzly doesn't talk much. And that's kind of all we know about him. But, you know, we still like queer him up and like give him some pathos. Forearm does not get a lot to do. We don't know anything about his backstory. You know, obviously he's involving himself in like mutant terrorism. So there's some motivation. Yeah. But a lot of his early stories, when we get any attention, are like him deciding, are we going too far? Are killing humans too much? When Danny Moonstar comes into the picture, that gets expanded, obviously.
Definitely, definitely. When I was doing my homework, I was going back through his appearances. I don't know how, but he keeps sneaking up on telepaths. Like Cable's like a high level telepath. Psylocke is a high level telepath, and he sneaks up on both of them at one point. Is it because his head is so empty? Like, because he's so like big and lumbery. There's no way in hell he's quiet. Like
that, sometimes that's an aspect of someone's powers where you can block telepaths out. But maybe that little headpiece he wears has some sort of tech in it. You know,
maybe.
Forearm gets to fight Cable in one issue. He gets to fight Garrison Kane, Weapon X, in another, where there's a moment where Kane throws Sumo into Forearm, but then also pulls his own metal arm off and whacks Forearm.
That was beautiful.
He shoots a fist at Forearm and Forearm's like, gross, that's disgusting. And then he gets electrocuted, Forearm does. Like Kane kicks Forearm's ass, which is kind of fine. It's fine with me. And then the MLF kind of become one of those teams rotating around the Marvel Universe, like the Upstarts and the Morlocks and the Brotherhood and there's probably 8 more Nasty Boys, right? Like there's a bunch of these characters. When we move over to X-Factor 77, 78, great. Forearm is like in more of a leadership position of a team. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple running gags with the MLF. Like Shatterstar chops Reaper's hand off in the first, one of his first appearances. And I think Reaper gets a hand or a foot chopped off like six different
times. Yeah, he does. I noticed a lot of that too. A lot of missing appendages for Reaper.
So X-Factor 7778 is the story where Peter David explores Tempo's parents. Her dad like runs a clinic where you can go if you're pregnant and like get an injection to make sure your baby's not a mutant. So Forearm's a little part of this. The art by Larry Stroman's really fun.
Yeah, the art's great. This story is like a little bit uncomfortable. Like I imagine it probably was back then too, but it's just like similarity, like the parallels that it draws like women's reproductive rights and all that stuff like that. Like, oh, like this is like time really is cyclical. This is poignant again. But I also like, but that's another situation. I kind of side with the MLF on this. Like, blow that shit up. I have trouble like some of their like their big bad stuff. Obviously, I can't get on board with. But getting rid of a like a clinic that kills mutant babies just because they're mutants is I'd call that a pretty gray area.
There's some wild stuff in this early X-Factor run, and a lot of people really remember this era for Peter David as beloved because a lot of it, you know, the Multiple Man, Polaris, like there's a lot of characters we really love in the forefront, but the themes explored, there's like that story where a bunch of the expatriates from Genosha try to arrive on American soil and they're not allowed. There's the legacy virus stuff. I mean, and it's the mutants working for the conservative government. Like that alone is a lot. There's some really interesting stories. Forearm in this battle, they're sent to kill Dr. Tucker and Wildside gets too rough again. And Forearm fights Multiple Man in this one. He goes, you guys can pile on me all you want. With Forearms, I can handle anything. But Multiple Man just like buries him under clones.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. That's
kind of... I love his confidence though. I love his confidence.
Multiple Man would be an annoying character to fight. You punch him in like two armor sprout. It's a lot. Then we kind of jump over to the like long form crossovers. Like the Executioner's Song is here and there's like 70 characters in play and it's epic. Executioner's Song is so great front to back. It's like a crossover done right. You see 18 parts in like six different books or whatever and it's great front to back.
I actually last year I did a reread of Executioner's Song just because I forgot what episode. Somebody was doing an episode on one of the characters and I kept hearing the title. I was like, oh, I need to go back and read that again, and it slaps. It's so good.
Forearm gets a couple of really key moments in this. Forearm goes to Panama with Reaper. This is where we get the gold tank top.
Yeah. The first thing I noticed is that he keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And like, I know his superpower is forearms, but those tits are a superpower of their own right, really. So he keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And then they deliver the canister to Mr. Sinister, the infamous legacy virus that plot hole. But like, Mr. Sinister does not seem that trusting to like get a canister of something and not open it immediately to make sure there's something inside. Like, he is so much more, I don't know, I didn't buy that as a character decision for Mr. Sinister. There's something so homoerotic about the artwork in this crossover. And it's just, Liefeld really, like, sort of set the pace for this style, like, all throughout the 90s. And I'm so grateful for that because they're just so fun to look at.
I love, though, because this is also the era where we get a lot of pencilers like Adam Pollina and Chris Pachalo and, like, you know, really, really revolutionary new ways. Mark Bagley during this era. Sinister is getting the bodies in stasis of Cyclops and Phoenix to trade them to Strife, who then gets to take them to the moon and like rant in a soap opera way about, you're my parents and you were supposed to care for me, because he thinks he's the original and Cable's the clone. So Forearm gets to be the person who picks up those bodies and deliver them. And that's kind of delightful. I think his most iconic moment is that scene where he like drags them down the hall by their hair.
And it's like, it's a view from overhead. I was like, oh, that's so viscerally caveman. It's just, it's so good.
But when they're in Peru to meet with Sinister, Forearm, quit your crying and wipe your forehead, you're sweating on me, is what he says to Reaper. Reaper goes, excuse me, I hate this heat. Deep hatred. When I was a kid, I decided I'd rid the world of humidity. And Forearm goes, you were a pretty stupid kid. Just, you know, we don't get a lot from him, but he's delightful.
Yeah.
Force 16 is the scene where he gets to drag Cyclops and Jean by their hair to Zero, who's another character I would love to do a Patreon on. Zero, who's the gay robot. the muscle gay robot. There's a bunch of crazy fights. In X-Factor 85 is where Forearm and the MLF get to fight fight the X-Men.
When he snuck up on Psylocke, not only is she like a high-level telepath, but she's a fucking ninja. Like, and he's still this gigantic big himbo still manages to sneak up on her. Like, Boom Boom is forever one of my absolute favorite characters in all of Marvel. And getting to see her like lay him out, just I love her.
I love Boom Boom. I could count like my top five favorite Boom Boom moments. My number one is Leah Williams in Exterminators, where Boom Boom takes her top off and it says boom boom as she like explodes bombs out of her tits. My second favorite is this issue where Archangel cuts off Kamikaze's head and the head rolls by Boom Boom, who's like barf.
Yes. Oh, I love Tabby so much.
Forearm gets a moment in this scene where he like jumps up behind Archangel in between the metal wings and like grabs his head. I've been waiting a long time to pluck your wings, Archangel. And this is such a fun read. Archangel goes, you know, in my younger days, in one of my rare moods of depression, I'd wonder if there was any mutant power more stupid than that of just having wings and flapping around. Today, I finally get an answer to that question. Thank you for providing it, Forearm, which is delightful.
It was such a read. And he's like, oh, you cut me. And there's like a little bit of blood on his lip. And as he's complaining about it, his friend gets his head just lopped off.
Well, like, this like, is like, oh, okay. Angel's wings. Like, Angel beheads like 7 people. His wings like pop around in his air. It's insane. And that's it for the MLF in The Executioner's Song. Then we get Rainfire, the X-Force 26 through 28. Rainfire is the crazy genetic experiment, evil version of Sunspot. Go listen to my episode on him. We're not going to talk about his weird history.
Yeah, but I'm going to have to, because he's a confusing character to me.
He gets changed by about 3 different writers, but we do cover it. So if you give it a listen, I'll teach you the whole story. We also talk a lot about more of the MLF's motivations here. But Forearm, Tempo, Reaper, and Wildside are in a jail in Roanoke, and they're in their costumes, in restraints, like strapped to the wall. This prison sucks.
Yeah.
Rainfire like rains fire from the skies and kills all the guards and recruits these men for a new mutant liberation front. He's very dramatic as well. He gets narration for each character. Michael McCain, known as Forearm, your enormity of strength is matched only by your propensity for hooking up with the wrong people.
Yeah.
What do you think of his name, Michael McCain?
Every time I see it, I see Michael Caine. And so I think of old, like, wrinkly Sir Michael Caine. That's always my first thought. I love a comic book alliteration for a name. So, like, Michael McCain, I think it's a perfect name for him.
Rainfire's first move for the team, and he promises them fame and riches, is to capture Henry Peter Gyrick. Let's go get that Republican asshole from the government and, like, hold him hostage and tell the world we're not going to stand for this, which, you know, I get it.
He says, let's start small. And he's like, we're going to kidnap Peter Gyrick. I'm like, that's starting small. That's pretty large scale, dude.
You're not blowing up a country, you know? Look at what...
That's fair, I guess.
But this is the equivalent of a group of queer terrorists, like, capturing, you know, Mike Lee or some shit from the government. Yeah. Or, you know, Clarence Thomas or Marjorie Taylor Greene or, you know, somebody who were like, Mike Pence.
Oh my gosh. No, he'd like that too much.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
He's got a BDSM fetish for sure.
He for sure is wearing leather something underneath. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He's got the choky dog collar underneath that tie for certain.
We also meet Locus, who's all these characters deserve their own Patreon. Wildside, Reaper, and Locus. Tempo needs a trial. I love Tempo a lot. But Locus is here. Locus is a teleporting character who weirdly like changes races between appearances sometimes. And then we've also got Moonstar. Danny Moonstar's been missing since the end of X-Force. She was like off in Asgard with her horse, and here she's back in her like red mask bathing suit costume. And like,
I love this costume.
Oh, I hate it so much.
Oh my god, really? I love it. I don't know why. It's just because it's maybe just because it's so not her, and she's so Cyclops, like she's so Girl Scout. It makes me so happy to like see her going through a slut era. I just like yes, Danny, rebel, you can do it.
We learn later she's undercover, but she's just using the name Moonstar as her last name, and she's also got a new power here. here where she's got like a bow and she can fire psionic arrows. Now, when I was collecting X-Force, I had never read New Mutants, right? Like I was a kid. It took me a long time to go back and learn the early history of these characters. When they'd show someone new, I'd be like, who the fuck is Warlock, this tech alien?
Yeah.
Like, it took me a long time to learn all my continuity. So Moonstar, I didn't understand the relevance at the time. In their first mission, they kill this weird old man who is upgraded in like a cybernetic form. His name is Hardaway, which is like what you take after Viagra if it lost
its lung. Yeah, right.
And Wildside kills the guy again. Tempo goes, I hate this. I hate all of you. And Forearm says, hey, Heather, come on. You don't really mean that, do you? And she says, fine. I hate almost all of you, but I still hate all of this. Which implies a friendship between these two, which I really like. Steve Orlando will later tell us in a flashback that Tempo was really close friends with the character Sumo, who's really brutally murdered by Cable in a particular issue. So I love some of the queer characters on the team bonding.
Definitely.
So in this scene, Forearm rips out Hardaway's like artificial heart and holds it in Henry Peter Gyrick's face. And, you know, this is like an old man upgraded into tech. And he goes, what did you do to him? What did you turn him into? If not an emotionless killing machine, then X-Force attack. This is Warpath versus Forearm.
He has this like, I found this true of Dragonettes as well. They have this like almost unearned level of confidence in their own abilities. And he's like, oh, I can take Proudstar. And it's just like pop, pop, and he's down. Like, oh, bless your heart. You're so sweet.
Warpath has kicked his ass before. And in this fight, Warpath, who's not great at puns. I love Jimmy Proudstar. I love him so much. But he goes, Forearm is a foregone conclusion. In other words, about him, woof. And Forearm again says, like, I keep getting stronger. And Warpath's like, yeah, but it's not enough, bitch. And like knocks it out.
Yeah.
At the end of this, Tempo quits the team and Feral joins MLF. And then it's continued in X-Force Annual 3. Again, we talk about this in the Rainfire episode, but Nicieza in these superhero stories gives us a lot of complexity, right? Because you kind of side with the MLF capturing Henry Peter Geyer.
Yeah.
The X-Force saves him, but at the end, Cable still punches him in the face. It's still there. And X-Force Annual 3 is another one of those odd appearances that like has a lot of complexity, where they go to China in an effort to help a group named Three Piece, who are like mutant rebels against the Chinese government. But Rainfire ends up like extorting them and making a deal with the government in the end. We won't explore it a ton. They've also moved over their new base. The MLF is on the Animator's Island. Do you know the character Animator? Animator.
I don't.
Animator is like, do you know the island of Dr. Moreau? Like the evil scientist who experiments.
Yeah.
Animator's that guy.
Is he the guy that did Bird Brain?
He made Bird Brain and he killed Cypher. He's the guy that killed Doug Ramsey with like a straight shot at the end of the story. So they're on that guy's island and they're like, there's like a bunch of weird mutated animals living around them. You know, Moonstar notes in this issue, Forearm's not a bad guy. Despite everything, I find I actually like him. Maybe it's because we have a mutual hatred of Feral and Wildside. And then she thinks, funny, I know why I'm here, but I can't figure out why he's part of this group. And we never get that question answered.
We never get that answered. No. And that is, it didn't occur to me that I was bothered by it until I realized that we never learn.
And then Forearm also punches a character named Jade Dragon in this issue. It's fun to see him punch a dragon.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's fun. That is the strict comic book fun right there.
And then, you know, things all fall apart and Rainfire is kind of Sunspot, but mostly not. And again, go see the episode.
I did, like, because this is part of the, like, one of the only times we get any sort of backstory on Forearm. It's like, you know, he's a city kid. He grew up a city kid. I'm like, what city? Because he's got no street smarts whatsoever. Like Des Moines? where is his boy from? Because he's sweet. And he's not dumb, but he's got no street smarts whatsoever.
I'm a city kid from Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, right? It's like, okay, if you say so. I guess we have to believe it.
The MLF gets used in Excalibur 104, 105, and Forearm does not feel like he's in character here at all. There's a new mutant named Selby on the team. Forearm's like tough and gruff and like kind of savage and dumb in this. He threatens to break Captain Britain's neck once.
Which is really out of character for him. It was a weird beat.
And he's talking like a dumb guy, and Moonstar like knocks him out with an arrow. Like, the writer used the strong guy without researching who the strong guy was. That's fine.
It was late Excalibur. That makes sense.
The reason they are there on Muir Island is to steal intel on the legacy virus from Moira MacTaggert, as well as intel on the Xavier protocols. Not super relevant. Then we jump to X-Force Cable, annual 1997. So in this, the only relevant scene, they're in Montana, and we get kind of a key exchange of dialogue between Forearm and Moonstar. So you get the idea that these two have really bonded while living, you know, in remote places with awful people. Forearm says, "Hey, are you okay? Come on, Danny. I can tell something's eating you up inside. Hey, I'm your friend. Talk to me." She says, "Look at us. We're fugitives hiding out in the middle of nowhere. This isn't how I pictured my life, living underground, constantly on the run. If something doesn't change soon, I think I'm gonna..." And he goes, "Sorry to interrupt, Danny, but I think you better duck." Because Brunhild, the Valkyrie, flies down on her horse, and there's a three-headed dog attacking. Forearm gets slobbered on. He goes, "Bad enough I gotta deal with giant dog breath, but this is just plain disgusting." And that's all that happens.
He is really, for such a big guy, he's very like prissy and like, "Ooh, don't get me sticky," which is which I can totally sympathize with, because I'm that guy. I did have a question on this, because like, she's like, "We're fugitives living underground, like not how I picture my life." Isn't that exactly the same thing that X-Force is doing? Like, aren't they literally living underground? Like,
depends on which era of reservation. Danny's about to rejoin the team, and they do that like hitchhiking across the country thing, or they're like road trip.
The road trip. Yeah.
God, Adam Pollina. I interviewed him really recently. That was really fun. He's a great guy. We're going to jump to X-Force 67-68. This is where it all falls apart. Rainfire's back, but that's not really part of this story. Do you want to talk to us about this? This is where the Prime Sentinels show up.
Reading through this, especially after Excalibur, it felt like a real return to character for Forearm, because he was like using his brain and he like wasn't talking like a 60s gangster. It felt like the character was back to what he was supposed to be versus just being like a tropey big guy from Excalibur.
In this one, the MLF and, you know, Dragonus is back, and Locus here, they've taken hostages at the Wiseman Institute because they got intel. It turns out it was a trap, that this place was developing a weaponized legacy virus. We still have Wildside being a fucking asshole, and Moonstar's like, "Stop killing people." Arm's like, "There's no evidence that there's anything going wrong here." This is also where they name him Michael McBride. I prefer McCain to McBride. Michael McBride's nom de guerre is Forearm for obvious reasons, but it doesn't suggest the mind behind the mass, which is fun.
That is fun.
They have hostages. X-Force intervenes, but it turns out it's all a trap. Their hostages are actually Prime Sentinels in disguise, which, if you've seen X-Men 97 recently, there's the where everybody shifts into Prime Sentinels. And the key here, and this is Forearm's like biggest moment in comics, frankly, as far as emotional, you know, relationships go, he learns that Danny is a plant. She's working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and has been in the MLF as a plant this whole time. In 68, this is where we get a little bit more. The caption box tells us, "From his birth, Michael McCain's size and extra extremities branded him a mutant." So he was born with his forearms. Yeah. He believed he was a freak until the MLF showed him that he was special. No matter what the cost, he swore to himself that he would not let anyone or anything intimidate him again. And so they're fighting the Prime Sentinels. There's a lot of yelling, but when he finds out about Danny's betrayal, he's genuinely hurt. "You lied to me."
Yeah.
She says, "I didn't mean to hurt you, Michael." He says, "You were working for S.H.I.E.L.D. You were sent to destroy the MLF." She goes, "Yeah, and it turns out they didn't need my help. Everyone's petty jealousies and psychoses were tearing the group apart from the inside. The MLF was a ticking bomb waiting to self-destruct." And he says, "This isn't about the MLF. It's about you and me. I thought you were my friend. I thought you were special." And she asks him to join X-Force, and he says, "Forget it, Danny. I'm better off alone."
Yeah.
And walks away.
I get it. I read this character as gay. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I just do. And so, like, you experience that betrayal from your best tag. How are you going to bounce back from that, you know? So, like, you've spent so long, like, being a vulnerable person and, like, building yourself up as, like, your own wall against the outside world, and you, like, let some, like, one person in, and she ends up being not necessarily against you in particular, but not exactly on your side either. And just like, I get it. I get why he would want to be alone after that. But I don't want him to be, because I love him and he needs friends.
The queer parallel, you know, you grow up in a place where nobody understands you, and then you get your family, right? And you know everybody's a little screwed up and it's not great, but they're your family. They're yours.
Yeah.
Forearm has that relationship with the MLF. He was a freak until they gave him a home. But he doesn't like most of his teammates. He likes Tempo, because she's already gone, and Strife is crazy and Rainfire is crazy, but now like he's walking away from the team because of this, and it's a moment for him. I kind of wish he had joined X-Force, but we already
have super wish he would have joined X-Force, but he would have been redundant on X-Force, so he probably would have been a casualty, you know.
Now we move to his worst appearance, Wolverine volume 2 number 167, entering Bloodsport. What are your thoughts? People are receiving money.
I had never read this. That's a very 90s Wolverine comic. I love that he got beat by Anaconda.
who is one of the biggest lesbians in Marvel Comics.
I love Anaconda.
I love her.
As much as I hate to see him go, I love how he went out. I thought it was hilarious. My two favorite parts of that issue, though, were one, I fell in love with like the campness of Razor Fist and like early Wolverine, like Patch era Wolverine. And with his like tiny little silver jumpsuit, like blades on every appendage, and his high-heeled silver boots.
Razor Fist has his arms cut off and replaced with blades. He dies, and his brother has his arms cut off and replaced with blades to become the new Razor Fist. And he dies, and then a third brother gets his arms cut off. Another Razor Fist. It's stupid.
Oh my god.
Also, Anaconda is canonically straight, or at least bi, because she dates Puff Adder for a long time in the comics, which is great. Puff Adder is another mutant, actually.
Is he?
Yep. Puff Adder is the little guy that can bulk his size up. These are all characters that deserve Patreons. Anaconda is one of those, that I'm extraordinarily fond of. There's a bunch of weird characters in this issue, too. They get killed very quickly. Oddball.
Oh my god. And Gamecock?
Gamecock's here.
Was that his first and only appearance, I'm guessing?
No. Gamecock is 70s blaxploitation era villain. He's kind of like a jive talking, like street drug hustling. He fights the Falcon. He's dressed like a rooster. It's rough.
Oh, that is rough.
But in this, Forearm fights Anaconda. He says, feel kind of bad for having to kill a woman to advance. I mean, it's not exactly the gentlemanly thing to do. And then she breaks his neck, but he's not dead because he's back in Liefeld's back too, in X-Force Volume 2. And it's terrible. I will give one sentence to this series. Strife reforms the MLF. They kill the administrator. They fight X-Force. Then they fight Scorn. And it's bad. But then Liefeld brings his characters back from time to time. He uses Forearm again in like Deadpool Bad Blood. Anytime they give him another book, I'm like, why? He's doing one now. There's a Deadpool team-up book by Liefeld now, and it's terrible.
Really?
Yeah, it's awful.
I find that Deadpool can be really good because it breaks the fourth wall so hard. Like, there needs to be like a certain level of subtlety to it, and most do not capture that at all.
I genuinely love a lot of Deadpool comics. Nicieza, Joe Kelly.
Yes, Nicieza is like king.
Gail Simone. More recently, Alyssa Wong just did Deadpool, and I loved their work, but often it's done very wrong. Anyway, Forearm's gone for a while. We get M-Day, we get Genosha, and then we get Uncanny X-Men Volume 5, which is the book by Matt Rosenberg right before Krakoa launches. And basically, it's like X-Men at the end of days. Cyclops has moved the team into the basement of Harry's hideaway. All the mutants are gone in the age of X-Man. They're trying to just like tie up all affairs before everyone dies. Hope shoots Cyclops in the brain, and he literally has one eye through a lot of this. It's a lot, and there's a list of like, here's all the threats we need to take down. One of them is the MLF. So Forearm gets a few little appearances here. It doesn't do a lot. He's in like a little red and yellow harness, and they try to destroy a lab where like there's a medication that can wipe out the X gene, but for some reason the X-Men find that offensive.
Yeah, like, I didn't get that either. I'm siding with the MLF on this one too, guys.
It's very questionable. And then Forearm gets to fight Rockslide here, which is kind of fun.
It was cute. Kid thing, is that what he called him?
Rockslide goes, if you had six arms, would you have been called Six Pack? Where does it end? Forearm says, do you realize what they manufacture in this lab? What is it that you're trying to protect? Rockslide, don't know, don't care. Forearm says, they're making a vaccine to wipe out mutants. You're protecting people who are trying to wipe mutants from the face of the earth. MLF just got their asses kicked. They're back in Uncanny X-Men 15 and 16, where they're protesting at an anti-mutant rally hosted by this awful bigot. And this time, Multiple Man kicks Forearm's ass again. But they are working with Hope Summers here, which is a major upgrade. They also give Forearm some four-handed handcuffs at the end, which is cute. They're specially designed.
That was cute. I feel bad for him because he's like that messy friend that you really want the best for them, but they just keep getting into it, you know? I really have a soft spot spot for this character.
Yeah, you know, and here's the thing. We'll get into this at the end as we wrap up our discussion, but Forearm's never really done anything wrong, in my opinion.
No.
He's worked for the wrong people, but Xavier is the wrong people. So is Cable.
Right? Oh my God. Like, just because, like, his boss is a little bit worse, like, he's branded a villain. I just never thought that was fair. Yeah.
Yep. Forearm gets a couple great moments in the Krakoan era. We get him with his dog on the island with, you know, New Mutants number 9, where he's just living in a little house. He's great. He helps fight the Amenthi demons. He joins Sword along with Slab. They're little buddy.
Yeah.
He gets a costume and a mustache for a minute.
And for a minute, he goes gray, which was weird. A coloring error, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know. Speaking as a guy who's going gray, I'm here for it.
He looks a little bit like Magneto. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. I support you. Go natural, babe.
And then Forearm gets his biggest moment in comics history in a book called X-Men Curse of the Man-Thing.
I bought the trade. It's Steve Orlando. And because it's a Steve Orlando book, I bought the trade. I really enjoyed it. I, again, see myself siding with Exodus on this one. It's not like we're already giving them, you know, medicine. We're giving them help. It's not our responsibility to save their ass. It's a very, like, not my circus, not my monkey's attitude, which I totally support because humans are terrible. Like, flat scans suck.
So in this team, Magic forms a new team called the Dark Riders, which is the old Apocalypse Inhuman villains that, like, hunt down people. Gauntlet is another character that deserves one of these episodes. The Dark Riders include Magic, Marrow, Mammax, Wolf Cub, and Shark Girl, along with Forearm.
I also love Shark Girl. There's something so, like, body horror about Shark Girl that just, like, something about, I don't know, I think of, like, going through puberty with, like, giant shark teeth and just, like, everyone being terrified of you. And it makes me think that she's, like, sweet and sensitive because that's, I don't know, I love her.
The Patreon, I will only cover characters that wouldn't qualify for a trial on my show. Marrow and Magic both get trials, but Mammax, Sub, Shark Girl, like, they all need Patreons.
Was it, Mammax was, he was a Chuck Austin creation, right? Mammax?
Yep. But when I interviewed Chuck Austin the first time and asked him about Mammax, he's like, who?
I'm really fond of that run in general. Whenever Connor had him on Cerebro, it was the only time I've ever written in a question. I saw so much of myself in his juggernaut. I was like, they're going to get a million questions. There's no way they're going to answer mine. And they did. And to tell you, I was listening to it at the gym and asked my question and just, like, hearing him, like, answer it, just, like, I was sobbing.
I got to make that introduction. I got to introduce Connor to Chuck. Chuck's become a really dear friend of mine, actually. We chat regularly. Wonderful, wonderful human. I'm really fond of Mammax. And again, I will fully do a Mammax episode. When I was growing up, I was a big He-Man guy. I had all the action figures. And there was an action figure named...
Oh, he's such a He-Man character.
Well, there's a He-Man action figure named Snout Spout, which is terrible. But you could put water in the action figure and push a button and it would squirt out the elephant's trunk.
Oh my God, I love it.
In this issue, the Dark Riders join with Man-Thing to fight a new villain named Harrower, who is, like, a crazy evil scientist lady who's really fun. And Forearm gets one moment in this where he's cracking his knuckles with all forearms and he goes, "So we're all on the same page when it comes to humans with extermination fantasies." And then he gets to rip monsters in half. It's cute.
I loved it. I came across the JPEG of that panel before I'd read anything of it. I was like, oh, that's a good look for him. I like it.
In Sword number 9, we get Forearm's worst moment where he gets murdered by Random.
That's where he's all of a sudden, like, completely, like, stark white.
Yeah, and Random puts a fist in Forearm's mouth and then grows spikes out of it to murder Forearm, who obviously gets resurrected by Krakoa later, so he's fine. He survives in order to come up in more fucking Liefeld books, like X-Force Killshot Anniversary, and he fights Venom Pool, and then he's back in Deadpool. But it's fine. We see him then take a job on one page in an X-Men Volume 6 number 17, where he is working at the bar with Blob at the Green Lagoon, which I love. And then he's at the Hellfire Gala. And then he's also in that, like, big panorama of Luciano Vecchio characters turning into the Phoenix to fight Enigma at the end of the Krakoan era. And that's it. That's Forearm. That's where he comes from.
I have a question about the gala, because I never noticed him up there whenever I read that book the first time. So seeing that he was in that book, I was like, wait, how did I miss this? Was he doing security? 30? What was he? They had him like up there in the corner, like making him look at screens, like, oh, let him down to the party, guys.
Yeah, I thought he was up there working maybe, or maybe he snuck in. They didn't notice him there. My favorite moment for this character is, single favorite, is he gets to drag Scott and Jean by their hair. My favorite thing about him is his relationship with Danny Moonstar. And yeah, his biggest moment ever in the comics is his membership on the Dark Riders. That's kind of it for him. What are these stories about Forum that you need or crave? Like, what was it about this character you want more of?
I would love to just have him fleshed out more. I want to hear about his life growing up on the mean streets of Boise, you know? Like, he seems like a character who has, like, there's enough depth to him. Like, he's big and strong, but he's also like smart and sensitive. Like, I feel like there's like really, they could really expand on him and do more with him, and rather than use him as sort of a like a sacrificial lamb or just generic strong person. I mean, we know that he doesn't necessarily love the violence. Maybe he is working with like mutant kids, like teaching them to like use their powers to like, I don't know, save puppies or some shit. Give him a role that focuses more on his sensitivity and makes like the strength like the heavy juxtaposition versus the other way around is what I would love to see.
The interesting thing, I'll cover two things quickly. Forearm is one of a handful of characters that has multiple limbs. Spiral has six arms, but Forearm is very easily confused for that guy on the Savage Land Mutates named Barbarous.
Yeah.
Also has four arms and is a big dude. The interesting thing, if you were ever going to get like a key exploration of Forearm, I don't think he'll ever make it onto a main X-Men team, simply because there's usually only room for one big strong guy in the back. Right now, that choice is always going to be Juggernaut, with like Warpath as a close second, Thunderbird as a third. And when you go down the list, and Warpath's going to be like number 19 out of like the big strong dudes.
Yeah.
And like, the writer that like particularly loves this character. I think as long as his name is Forearm, he's kind of a joke. Like, it's easy to just like roll your eyes at this terrible code name, but that doesn't matter so much because there's a lot of characters with jokes. Fucking Spider-Ham has like 8 comic books.
Oh my God. But I think Forearm would be perfect for like a little Marvel Unlimited, like a never ending scroll sort of comic thing. You
I
know?
Would write that.
I think
I would
he'd
write
be perfect for that.
Even
he's,
just one...
he's well known enough to like draw attention, but not so A-list that they'd be like worried about what you do with him, you know?
Yeah, you know, he's a character that I think the X-Men would often think makes bad decisions or allies with the wrong people. But frankly, he's like a voice of reason on any of those teams when the X-Men are fucking putting Sabretooth and Mystique on their teams, you know?
Right.
He would make an interesting ally who has like a voice of reason. I think he is someone you could put in deep cover somewhere, and it turns out he's one of the good guys. I think the idea of him getting stronger and stronger is something we've never really seen explored. I think of him as kind of just a sleepy, like, he just wants to like stay home and relax, but the world won't fucking leave mutants alone, so he's gonna take and punch you in the face if he has to, you know?
I get that. I am so, that is so on my level. Like, I get you, Forearm. I'm right there with you.
Almost every one of his appearances is him doing something heroic for mutants and then getting punched down by the X-Men. Literally, that's his story over and over and over again, which is crazy because he's a superhero in that way.
I know. And I love it. And I love his wardrobe. I love everything about him. I hope that he becomes like one of those obscure characters that like steals people's hearts and then gets a little bit more page time down the road. I would love that for him.
I love doing these episodes on minor characters where we get to do a full read and talk, and then like we form a relationship with this character based on these discussions, and I never forget, you know, I will always associate Forearm with you now. But he's a character I'm very fond of. This was a delightful conversation. Do you have any final thoughts, Ken, or is there anything you'd like to share with our listeners? And as we're going out, where can people find you online? We're going to put this out on September 25th. You can plug anything you'd like to plug.
You can find me online. My Instagram is at Ken Christ. I am trying to post more. I've been in such a hole of like U.S. politics, like mind numbing. I'm trying to put out positive energy, guys. I really am. So if you want, you know, if you want funny memes about socialism and thirst traps, come find me.
Any final thoughts on Forearm you want to share?
Give him a chance, guys. He is like both lion and lamb. He's strong and he's heroic, but he's like sensitive and he's unsure of himself. And I feel like, especially for like for a lot of gay men, I feel like he is a character that we can really relate to. Maybe he gets caught up with the wrong crowd and he hooks up with the wrong people, but we've all done that.
Again, none of this is canon. It's officially fanfic unless I ever get to write the stories. But I recently did just for myself, it's only I have read this, but I wrote a limited series called Mutant Liberation Front based on a team in a post-Krakoan era. And I really considered Forearm in the strong guy position, but I actually ended up using the character Beef from the Hellions instead. And I really love Beef, but my beef story could be a Forearm story super easily too. I like him a lot. Okay,
he's such an easy character to sympathize with. If you haven't read Old X-Force, go do it. Like you won't regret it. It's a fun book all the way to the end. To be fair, once they switched over to X-Statics, I didn't get X-Statics, so I stopped reading then. But it's start to finish, fun book.
Yeah, or for listeners, do a front to back read through of just the appearances of the Mutant Liberation Front. That on its own is a fascinating thought experiment. It's a good
truly
because you can take this from the perspective of Wildside or Forearm or Feral, and it's a completely different story each time. Keep my own social media private. The guy that kiddos, Ken, you're welcome to add me if you ask. I have a Patreon on in October. We're going to be doing more horror themed characters, but we're opening the month with Hellcow. Josh Trigo is coming back on to do Hellcow with me, which is going to be delightful. And then we've got some fun surprises after that. Out on the main show, immediately after the release of this episode, you can watch for our monthly trial. The trial for September is the trial of the Stranger, who's a big gay space god with a big white mustache. It's going to be really interesting. I'm recording that tomorrow, actually. I'm really excited. Thank you, everybody, for the ongoing support. Ken, it was delightful to hang out today. I can't wait to have you back on the main show sometime.
Likewise, I always enjoy myself.
And we'll see you all back here next time on the Gray Malkin Lane Patreon.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.